Good evening, and thanks to our sister station, WPFW, in Washington, D.C. In more news, the president and the teen climate activists at Davos in a right-wing hit job on bail reform in New York. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. The impeachment trial of President Donald Trump, Donald John Trump, enters its first day after sparring over rules and attempts to bring in more evidence and witnesses by Democrats, and the GOP fights to bring the trial to a quick end. Last night, a bitter clash between House Judiciary Committee Chair Democrat Jerry Nadler and White House Counsel Pat Cipollone.
They will not permit the American people to hear from the witnesses. And they lie. And lie and lie and lie. And the president sometimes relies on a theory of absolute immunity that says that he can order anybody in the executive branch not to testify to the House or the Senate or to a court. Now, obviously, this is ridiculous. It's been flatly rejected by every federal court to consider the idea. It's embarrassing. The president's counsels would talk about this today.
You don't deserve, and we don't deserve, what just happened. Mr. Nadler came up here and made false allegations against our team. He made false allegations against all of you. He accused you of a cover-up. He's been making false allegations against the president. The only one who should be embarrassed, Mr. Nadler, is you for the way you've addressed this body.
The acrimony led Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, the presiding judge in the impeachment trial, to admonish both sides to remember where they are.
Remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. In the 1905 Swain trial, a senator objected when one of the managers used the word pettifogging, and the presiding officer said the word ought not to have been used. I don't think we need to aspire to that highest standard, but I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
And pettifogging is an old English term for an underhanded lawyer or a politician who quibbles about small points. President Trump has been in Davos, Switzerland this week at the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum. The event allows political and business leaders to rub elbows in the Alps. The theme for this year is Stakeholders for a Cohesive and Sustainable World. Teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg repeated her theme from last year's meeting, saying, "Our house is still on fire."
1 year ago, I came to Davos and told you that our house is on fire. I said I wanted you to panic. I've been warned that telling people to panic about the climate crisis is a very dangerous thing to do. But don't worry, it's fine. Trust me, I've done this before, and I can assure you it doesn't lead to anything. And for the record, when we children tell you to panic, we're not telling you to go on like before. We're not telling you to offset your emissions by just paying someone else to plant trees in places like Africa, while at the same time forests like the Amazon are being slaughtered at an infinitely higher rate. Planting trees is good, of course, but it's nowhere near enough of what is needed, and it cannot replace real mitigation and rewilding nature. And let's be clear, we don't need a low-carbon economy. We don't need to lower emissions. Our emissions have to stop if we are to have a chance to stay below the 1.5-degree target. This is not about right or left. We couldn't care less about your party politics. From a sustainability perspective, the right, the left, as well as the center, have all failed. No political ideology or economic structure has been able to tackle the climate and environmental emergency and create a cohesive and sustainable world. Because that world, in case you haven't noticed, is currently on fire. You say children shouldn't worry. You say, just leave this to us. We will fix this. We promise we won't let you down. Don't be so pessimistic. And then, nothing. Silence. Or something worse than silence. Empty words and promises which give the impression that sufficient action is being taken. We demand at this year's World Economic Forum participants from all companies, banks, institutions and governments immediately halt all investments in fossil fuel exploration and extraction, immediately end all fossil fuel subsidies, and immediately and completely divest from fossil fuels. We don't want these things done by 2050, 2030, or even 2021. We want this done now. I wonder, what will you tell your children was the reason to fail and leave them facing a climate chaos that you knowingly brought upon them? That it seemed so bad for the economy that we decided to resign the idea of securing future living conditions without even trying? Our house is still on fire. Your inaction is fueling the flames by the hour. And we are telling you to act as if you loved your children above all else. Thank you.
Yesterday, Trump said that Thunberg and other climate activists were prophets of doom, but today he lamented missing her speech.
How old is she?
She's 17 now.
Yes. That's good.
But what is your response to
she
her?
She beat me out on Time Magazine.
But did you hear from other world leaders and business leaders who said that they think that she has a message? That
no, I didn't, actually. But I would have loved to have seen her speak. I did not. No, not at all. I think aspects of it are, I think that some people are, they put it at a level that is, you know, unrealistic to a point you can't live your lives. We want to have the cleanest water on earth. We want to have the cleanest air on earth. Our numbers, as you saw, we had record numbers come out very recently. Our numbers are very, very good. Our environmental numbers, our water numbers, our numbers on air are tremendous. We have to do something about other continents. We have to do something about other countries. When we're clean and beautiful and everything's good, but you have another continent where the fumes are rising at levels that you can't believe. I mean, I think Greta ought to focus on those places. But we are doing better right now than we've ever done in terms of cleanliness, in terms of numbers. We have a beautiful ocean called the Pacific Ocean, where thousands and thousands of tons of garbage flows toward us, and that's put there by other countries. So I think Greta has to start working on those other countries.
Trump, who has said climate change is fake news in previous comments, took a softer tone this week. He promised to join in a worldwide program to plant 1 million trees to fight global warming. Other leaders at Davos hinted they had worked hard to convince Trump to sign on to the tree planting scheme and to sit down with young climate activists and involve them in the dialogue. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In local news, the New York Post kept up its assault on New York's bail reform law that went into effect earlier this month. The law eliminates bail for certain but not all minor crimes. Although heralded by criminal justice advocates, some politicians and pundits have been decrying the changes. The Post quoted a poll that showed New Yorkers unhappy with bail reform. They report that Brooklyn U.S. attorney has filed a complaint against the new law. Governor Cuomo avoided the subject of bail reform during his State of the State address, and some GOP figures have expressed doubts, including hard right and Islamophobic activist Pamela Geller. But Karis Love of Justice League New York says she's a crime victim who supports bail reform.
One who actually worked on the new bail law last session with New York State Assembly members and senators, it actually breaks my heart to see the fear-mongering, the outright lies put out. And also as someone who is a survivor of gun violence who supports these bills, I don't like the fear mongering that's happening, making it seem like New York City is not going to be safe, that it doesn't care about victims of crimes, and that's just not true. We were very intentional with these bills, keeping in mind victims. Like I said, me, myself, I am a survivor of gun violence, and I was at the table when we were talking about which crimes would be under these new bail laws where folks did not have to sit in jail because they did not have money. And that's what it really boils down to. This is about money, period, point blank.
Do you think there needs to be any reform of the bail reform laws that have been passed?
I do not think that there needs to be any reform for what it is that we've done. And let's be clear that the laws that are under the current bail reform laws, these crimes that are under these laws, were crimes that folks who had money were always able to bail themselves out for. So if you had money and you were charged with any of these crimes that fall under the bail reform, you were always able to bail yourself out if you had the money. Also, judges still have the discretion on how they charge people. And I'm a little suspicious of how judges are charging folks, stories being leaked to the media of like these really bizarre, weird cases where some of them almost seem like folks weren't even charged correctly, just to put out the narrative that these bail reforms are dangerous to New York City and to our society. And it's not true. Folks were always able to bail themselves out if they had money. So are we saying that people with money are less of a threat than people without money? Because then that's classist. And now we're getting to the root of our criminal justice system, which is racist and classist.
Do you have faith that the politicians who gave support to bail reform will stick to it in the face of this onslaught?
Absolutely. I've been meeting with elected officials, senators, specifically, and I've asked them on and off the record. I've asked them flat out, and they are still supporting. I've had a senator tell me, well, we're going to just have to do what we need to do, because the bail laws were, if you didn't have money, then you sat in jail. And so we don't want that anymore. And so I've talked to senators who've supported this to make sure. Also to make sure, because I want to know, as an organizer myself, I want to know what feedback they're getting. Do we need to be doing more education in the community, which we do and which we are doing? We're doing these talks. We're doing teachings in the community so folks understand which laws are covered under the bail laws. And I've had really candid conversations with elected officials on how we can work together, those who supported it, how we can work together to keep them intact. I feel very confident.
Did you see it coming? This opposition, did you think that this might become even part of the national election?
Yes, I did. We have to really look at how we, even starting from policing, how we police. We make money off of mass incarceration. And there are even places in New York City where the prisons and the jails there are the economy. That is the foundation of policing here in this country, how it started. I was very much ready for this to happen. And the narrative of criminal justice, also want to be clear that these are people who have not been convicted of a crime. So we can't say you're innocent until proven guilty, but make you sit in jail before you've been able to be judged in front of a jury of your peers. And so although we say, oh, you're innocent until proven guilty, we see the numbers specifically of Black and brown and poor communities on how they're over-policed, how they're overcharged. And so I was definitely ready for this, which is why as an organizer, I'm out here in the community. I'm having conversations. I was still having meetings with elected officials, even though it got passed. We're going to need to keep it intact because I knew the opposition was coming to stomp all over it.
Karis Love of Justice League New York City. Scott Levy is chief policy counsel from Bronx Defenders. He says the tale spun by the Post about dangerous criminals released without bail is just pettifogging.
If you cherry pick stories that are designed to prey on people's fear and distrust and anxieties, right? Unfortunately, those are often the stories that are aired. But the truth is they are distracting from an underlying truth that our criminal legal system is now more just and more fair. It is now operating closer to our highest ideals about our justice system and how it should work. The other thing is that, right, this is a reform that is overwhelmingly benefiting low-income people and people of color. That is something that is also being overlooked. It is working, and it is working to help undo some of the harm that our criminal legal system has done over the past decades. And I think a few cherry-picked stories shouldn't distract us from that fact.
Can you give us a story of something good, something hopeful that came from this?
We are seeing it every day. We are seeing our clients released and making it to work so they don't lose a job. We are seeing clients released and making it back to a shelter placement so they don't lose their housing. We're seeing people released, you know, making it to school and making so they don't have unexcused absences from school and making sure that their children are cared for, right? There are thousands upon thousands of positive stories from bail reform, right? People returning to their communities and living their lives and making sure that they can become productive or remain productive and in their lives and just do the things that they need to do in their lives. Unfortunately, that story is not really being told.
Maybe you or someone you know has told you has seen a great thing happen with an individual. Can you tell me one story like that?
We have seen clients who came very close to losing their job because of an arrest, but made it and were able to not just maintain the job, but of course continue to support their family, continue to meet all their obligations, pay their rent, pay their bills, all of those things that they wouldn't have been able to do had they been sitting in jail on bail that they couldn't make.
Tell us if you have hope if the governor and the mayor are going to stand behind this under this sort of withering attack.
I certainly hope that everybody will stand strong and allow these reforms to really take hold so that we can see the benefits of these reforms before panic and fear lead people to act rashly. This is a monumental and transformative reform. It's something that we should all be very, very proud of. It's something that makes New York a leader. It's not something that we should be afraid of. It's something we should be proud of. And I hope that everybody, all of our elected officials, really stand behind it and support it.
Sky Levy is Chief Policy Counsel for Bronx Defenders. And at his State of the, what he calls the State of the People speech, public advocate Jumaane Williams had this to say.
As we work to destroy the prison industrial complex, we also need to radically change what's happening inside those walls. We are dedicated to ending solitary confinement in the state of New York for Lailene Polanco and Nicholas Feliciano, for Khalif Browder, and for so many others who have been subject to that torture. Now, I mention Khalif Browder because in his name, New York has finally moved to reduce, not end, cash bail, which criminalized poverty and kept people locked away without a trial, destroying lives and communities. These new reforms need to be paired with programs and systems in place to help those who've been arrested, which I have some experience with, or incarcerated, which I do not, to succeed once they're out. It's why we've passed a first-in-the-nation law to ban THC testing in the hiring process. That's why we passed the Fair Chance Act to ban the box on job applications. And it's why, with, again, our partners at City Council, we're going to expand that law to help more people in our city get another chance. As we know, as we've seen, so often it's not about giving someone a second chance, but actually a first opportunity.
Public advocate Jumaane Williams, Khalif Browder killed himself after being locked away in solitary confinement for allegedly stealing a backpack. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.